are getting everything going. And our guests are getting comfortable. I said, okay, the mics are on. No more talking, my friends. Okay, perfect. Welcome to the Aging Well Together show. Today's show is on an incredibly important topic. It is all about falls. As today, we are celebrating the first day of fall. Yay! And how appropriate. It is the Falls Awareness Week this week in North Carolina, and we are going to get all up into that and talk about falls prevention and injury prevention with our guests. But before we do that, I'm excited for all of the information we're going to learn together. But I always want to give a shout out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carborough on 103.5 FM for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. The show is also available to stream anytime on WCOMFM. And through streaming services. So many thanks for listening to us. The Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the wonderfully helpful team from the Orange County Department on Aging. Please join us each week as we interview special guests to share information, resources, insights, and stories about the opportunities for aging well together. If you want more information on any of the issues we discuss or to suggest a topic for an upcoming show, you can email us at agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com or please connect with the Orange County Department on Aging, and they can be reached at 919-968-2070 or through their website at orangecountync.gov/aging. I'm also so excited that I get to announce that all of our recorded shows are finally now available on the Orange County Department on Aging's website. Yay, we're doing, we can be louder claps. We're doing little silent claps here. We're so excited. Yay. So we need a sound machine, Alicia. So I'm sure there is one somewhere in the station. So when you go to the website, that is the orangecountync.gov/aging, you can look on the left side of the computer screen, and you'll see a link for the Aging Well Together radio show, and you can listen to the past 19 shows because today is our 20th show. Yay! There's another. We need a little there we go. We need like a little fireworks. We got to get more production fun things in here. So anyway, many thanks to the wonderful Marilyn and Beverly over at Orange County Department on Aging for helping to get our website up and going. And then speaking of lovely things that you get to hear, not me, but a shout out to the Carborough Bass Band, the Robert Bradford Quartet. You heard just a few bars, a few moments of their awesome original song that they let us use, but you'll hear a lot more at the end of the show. It's wonderful having their opening and closing music. And now to my fabulous returning co-host, Alicia Reed. That is you. She's looked out.
That would be me.
That would be you. Thank you, my friend, for joining us again. Fitness instructor extraordinaire with the Orange County Department on Aging, who is, you're not glistening, but just rushed over from a health fair over at the...
And I look healthy, don't I?
You do. Was it at Seymour Center or Passmore Center?
It was at the Seymour Center. And well, I was announcing her and on the show the whole time. I won't give your name out yet.
Oh, shh. And get closer to the microphone. As I always say, I'm looking at the sound. I do, because you don't chat into it, and you have a lovely voice.
Didn't I have a mic close to my mic?
You were holding that mic super close. It was great earlier.
Okay, yeah, so now we hear you beautifully. Because we are a radio show and not a TV show, they don't get to read the shirt you're wearing, Alicia. What does your shirt say?
I can't see it from here.
It says, I said exercise, not extra fries.
America.
If you want more of Alicia's take, make sure to be listening at 3 o'clock for Afternoon Talk with Alicia, so she'll talk more about maybe the shirt she's wearing. Anyway, welcome back, Alicia.
Thank you, Heather.
And for me, I am your returning host, Heather Altman. I've spent the last 25 years working in aging services, and I continue to work with older adults and their families, connect with supportive resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members, and at 52, I'm focusing on my own changing needs, so I'm super invested in how we are all aging well together. All right, finally, we get to get into our topic and into our guests who are waiting so patiently. We have a fabulous returning guest, and we have a new person in the WCOMFM station. I'm thrilled to have the fabulous Marie Rawlings Dagger. I put your middle name or your previous name in there. We have Marie Dagger back with us, who is a certified dementia care partner and the Aging Transitions occupational therapist for the Orange County Department on Aging. Welcome back.
Thanks so much, Heather. It's good to be back with you today.
I know. You had so much fun, and you were wonderful about making sure we had this topic on this day of the show, so it's perfect. Mm-hmm. And my new best friend, who's having to deal with me as of we've met virtually, but we finally got to meet in person. I'm so excited to have Landon Weaver, the community paramedic coordinator. Is that your? I stalked you a little bit. Is that the right title that I found online? Okay, great. And you are with the Orange County Emergency Medical Services.
Correct. Yep. Happy to be here, and thank y'all for the invite.
Yeah. No, I'm so happy to have you here and. With the three of you, Alicia, you always take care of me, but Marie and Landon especially, I feel so safe and secure. I feel like any emergency could happen, and I've got, like, the top people to take care of me, so we're not going anywhere. I just want to keep you all with me. All right. We have a lot to get into for the first day of fall, for Falls Prevention Awareness Week. Yes, there's going to be a lot more. But we have a routine on this show of asking our guests to tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and what brought you into this world of falls now on this first day of fall. So,
Heather's making eye contact with me. I guess I'll start.
I know.
I am a returning guest, so you might remember me from a month or two ago.
Oh, I should have looked up. It's one of the, like, the fourth or fifth show.
Several months ago at this point. I am an occupational therapist. I'm based in the community with the Department on Aging. I've been there, gracious, probably 7.5 years now, which is mind-boggling how fast the time has gone. And I think I got into falls just as a natural segue from the other work that I was doing within the community. I started out purely in the dementia support world, but so often the families I was working with were also dealing with falls and fall-related situations. And so it just made sense to add that to my repertoire of things I could offer and support with the community, and now that's taken such a large role in the work that I do every single day here.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm not asking any follow-up questions, but I have follow-up questions
on this one.
Of course I do. This is why I have a talk show, because I have a lot to ask about. So we're going to get more into you, Marie. It's really wonderful to have you back. And again, thank you for reaching out to me. I think we hadn't even started Aging Well together. We were still anticipating and starting to plan, and you're like, hey,
Falls
September
week, let's
21st,
do it.
We're getting on for Falls Week. All right. Landon, tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, Marie emailed me about this so long ago that I was trying to figure out if it was still happening because she was planning for it so far in advance. So I work for Orange County EMS, and I have been with our EMS system since 2010. It seems like a short period of time and a long period of time all at the same time, like anything in life. As far as falls go, we started the Falls Prevention Program, which is in coordination with the Department on Aging, and began that way. It's known as the Stay Up and Active Program long, long ago, in around 2013. And I became involved in it in about 2015. And the reason that it existed, I'm sure we'll dive into this much more, but falls are incredibly prevalent in Orange County in our EMS system, and are the second most commonly dispatched type of EMS response in Orange County, and have been that way for that entire duration of time.
I had to call EMS, I think it was 3 times in 24 hours. When my mother fell multiple times, and it was during the pandemic, and I was doing intensive caregiving, and it was right before the end of her life, and things got really complicated, and so I knew the team. Oh, I should know the station that's at East 54.
Station 3.
Is it Station 3? If you're listening, I love you so much. Thank you so much for helping me. But yeah, and so I was part of that statistic of the frequently dispatched for my mom's fallen. I just need help getting her up. She doesn't need to go to the hospital, but I wasn't able to do it myself. So before we get into it, so you're a paramedic. Tell us about, first of all, your role as a community paramedic and what that means.
Yeah, it means a number of things. The world of community paramedics, a lot of programs are now titled mobile integrated healthcare. There's kind of a number of different descriptions for it.
Wait, hold on, slow down. Alicia and I have, we have a point where we each take our, when we hear things and we're like, oh, wait, mobile integrative.
Integrated healthcare.
I have not heard that. And you always know when we both are like, oh, I knew as soon as you said, I'm like, Alicia and I are going to get that. Okay, mobile integrated healthcare. Go on.
Yeah, so the kind of broad model of community paramedic programs is pretty recent, very recent in the, you know, kind of timeline of EMS. And they started out for a number of different reasons. So sometimes there's some confusion with what one program might do compared to another.
Yes, I already have questions about that. So unconfuse us.
So some of them, traditionally there are two models. There's a hospital-based model and then, like us, a county-based or an EMS system-based model. Some of them are very clinical, and it may be something like they're addressing a specific medical problem as follow-up, you know, post-hospital stay. And others, it can be a number of reasons. So for us specifically, our model began with exactly that of kind of a grassroots internal attempt to address the falls problem that we were encountering in Orange County. And one of our veterans, David Silfen, got a shout out, David Silfen, started all of that. And he basically recognized that we had this incredible resource in the county with the Department on Aging, and that it was something they were trying to address themselves, and that there was a disconnect in their ability to access the people that, you know, mostly needed the services. Whereas on the EMS side, it was the complete opposite. These are the individuals we were seeing every single day that oftentimes other people wouldn't even be aware that they were having falls, and we simply had no proper outlet to connect them with to try to resolve the underlying issue or what might spawn from that. So
got it. So I'm going to say something back to you and you tell me if it's right or wrong. So a paramedic is emergency services. We call 911, you come and you help us in whatever the crisis. A community paramedic, or the mobile integrated healthcare, is when the paramedic system has a program sponsored by the community, and so in this case, and that's the difference with a community paramedic, where you're doing your emergency work. On top of it, you have some specialized programs. Is that right? Did I get
that's
that?
A great description. You might need to write that down for us.
Okay. I have no.
I don't know
what I say after I say it. Like, it's funny that I'm being recorded, because often I'll say that I'm like, I have no idea what just came out of my mouth.
I say it in a different way every time, and it's like there's kind of the one floor elevator pitch, and then there's the, you know, multi floor elevator pitch. But
yeah,
that's exactly it. For us, it's kind of identifying where there are gaps or where there are areas that there's not kind of a proper disposition or a pathway to connect somebody with services that we deem possibly necessary, or even the time to communicate with someone long enough to determine what their personal needs are to start down that path. You know?
Yeah, it sounds, emergency services are by nature reactive, right? You're reacting, but there's also, and I've been around this community for a long time, so I remember hearing when this new falls program was first being conceptualized, and there's a strange proactive nature to it too, that when you're responding, how can you be proactive to try to identify folks, get them additional resources so you don't have to come back another time? So is that right? I'm looking at you and talking with my hands. It's sort of a mix of a proactive and reactive program.
Yeah, absolutely.
Still playing with
words. Absolutely. And I mean, I think from, you know, my experience in the field, and I know my counterparts and coworkers feel the same way. Oftentimes it's incredibly frustrating when, you know, it's kind of binary when you interact with somebody from the EMS perspective of, typically there's just the model of transport to the hospital, or there's that individual does not get transported to the hospital.
Yes.
And the reality is, for so many people that EMS interacts with, neither of those two dispositions really get down to the core of what's going on or address, you know, a solution for what they might actually be calling 911 for.
Yeah.
And that's exactly where this program lies, and that's where it began. So
I love it. I love it. And then I'm going to go over to Marie and say, so your role as an occupational therapist, and you started to talk a little bit about it, and then I didn't ask follow up, but this rising focus, oh, no pun intended, on falls. Okay. That was weird. Okay. How did then you link up and start to make this a reality of the two of your organizations partnering together?
I will say the concept of the joint work predates me. I think predates you as well, doesn't it?
Okay, so really I was the one around. I wasn't doing it. I was hearing.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it was just this idea, like Landon mentioned, is that there's so much like work that each of our teams are already doing, and if we can collaborate, then we can really reach those folks who need it the most. And so I know I work with Landon and his other community paramedic colleague Andy. You know, just about what, you know, what can we do within that home environment to try to make things just as safe as we can for folks. I mean, for the vast majority of folks in our community want to stay in the community, want to stay in their homes, but sometimes their homes just aren't set up for that, or there's a mismatch between that person's physical abilities and the way they're existing and living in their home space. So we all just put our heads together and see what we can do to make things a little bit more possible, a little bit more feasible for folks.
Okay, and I will ask a follow-up question that I kind of know the answer, but I'm going to, because I have a sense, and I actually experienced it firsthand. But so how does this work in reality? How does it go from you, Landon, responding to a call to then it brings in you, Marie? And so basically it's the stay up and active. When does that get triggered?
So as far as the timeline goes, and there are different pathways that people can come into it. In fact, sometimes we exchange referrals that aren't related to the specific program at all, probably pretty frequently.
Awesome. Yeah. It's just good to have another partner in the work that we're doing.
The actual process is if our field staff, if individuals on the ambulance, paramedics, EMTs, encounter somebody that they determine to be a fall risk, so whether they arrived at the location, they were dispatched for a fall, or whether in interviewing that person through their, you know, standard assessment process, they kind of saw some flags that this person might be at risk of falls, or if they just reported it, they'll flag the patient care report with that information and effectively put in a referral for our program.
Mm-hmm.
And then we pull those reports daily, and we reach out to those individuals. I feel like every step is really important, but that first step is the most important because we're completely relying on them and they do an amazing job of it. And again, I think it spills back into the kind of that being appreciative that they have a route to send folks that don't fit in that traditional model.
All of the paramedics have all been trained on how to ask and then flag, so then it goes to you and your colleague Andy.
So our paramedics and EMTs, whoever's writing the trip ticket, they'll flag it. We'll import that record into our case management software. We'll reach out to the individual, which, you know, of course, is difficult in and of itself. Cold calls are, you know, typically not welcomed warmly, and we completely understand
how
that.
How welcome, are you when you present yourself to a person who's just had something traumatic happen to them? How welcome are they for you to not come knocking on the door or calling on the phone?
It varies. I don't think it's typically so much a result of, like, the incident itself that, you know, the 911 call was spawned from. But I think it's more we get resistance, and again, completely understandably, of just cold calls in general, like that.
You're trying to come and help me not fall, and then can I have your social security number? Yeah,
yeah,
I know. So
yeah,
I've taught my,
you know, and then you're trying to take me out of my home.
Right.
Oh, right. I hadn't even thought about that.
See, now I have to leave my home, and that brings up a flag.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and I think that, again, pivots on why it's so important that our field staff, they're amazing at communicating with folks and kind of endorsing the referral that they're going to put in. So they'll typically kind of pad the person who called 911 with, hey, you know, we're going to send a referral to our community paramedics. They'll probably be calling you. Sometimes they call us directly from the scene, which is really successful as well because you can in real time interact with them. They can tell that there's a degree of trust there, you know.
So you're saying at the scene, if you get the call, then that's why I'll see, like, another group of sometimes where it has happened where the paramedics are there and then another group.
It does happen like that sometimes, but us going out in real time with them is pretty rare.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So then creating my own little emergencies here. The folks are referred. You go out and you make connection with them, and then what? Because I know at some point it's going over to Marie too. So I'm curious about how it happens. So
right.
Then you get the referral, you then cold call or visit or do something
to connect,
and then what happens?
Yeah, so we're all in the establishing phase when all the magic is happening on this side, as I pointed at Marie. But
oh, there's magic on both. You're creating a relationship.
No, it really is an amazing partnership. It's so we go out for that initial visit, and we'll screen folks on a whole array of things, but typically it'll be kind of focused on what the incident was and falls, of course, with that being the focus. We have learned a lot from Marie and her team over the years, and a lot of times we'll kind of implement a bare-bones version of what she is an expert in, of these simple things around the house that, you know, we can fix in and of ourselves, even with our training as paramedics and not in the occupational therapy realm.
You just walked into that follow-up question. Sorry, Marie, we will get to you. But, what things can you fix in the moment?
Right.
So,
yeah, well, I mean, I think it's a hybrid of things. We all in the EMS world, you know, you kind of, it's trial by fire, and you develop this
Spidey sense, the Spider-Man, there's like, right? Like,
it's absolutely a Spidey sense.
It really is.
The more you work within folks' homes, like as soon as you walk in, you kind of get this sense, this vibe about what, you know, what kinds of things you're going to be looking out for while you're in the space.
Is it like clutter and throw rugs, or it's really dark? Is it that kind of stuff, or is it
in the bathroom?
Yeah, we're having fun.
To you on that.
Oh, okay. All right. So, but the things that you can fix besides helping someone get up and deciding if they should go, but if there's other, I just was curious because you had said if there's things we can detect and address, I'm like, what are
those? I mean, the reality is, you know, the absolute reality is there's one Marie, and this
I know,
is just
there should be a lot
does.
More.
More.
And we had Ryan LaValle on not too long ago, another fabulous occupational therapist, but
yeah,
if
Ryan's
we could clone
amazing.
Them, yes, okay.
Yeah, so we, out of respect of her time, I'm sure Marie would prefer to be able to go everywhere all the time, but it just...
Yeah, she doesn't need to mother her baby. She can just be out and about. You know, that kid will raise itself.
Yeah, just, you know, 24/7. Tour the homes of the county. It's fine.
Yeah, so we try to do, like, a simplistic version of what Marie does. And there are some things that if we were to simply identify, you know, what looks like a tripping hazard to us, for instance, that the occupant or the resident, the individual is willing to relocate, that could potentially save Marie having to do that same work again.
I got it.
And so simple things like that, or, you know, access points, and I'll very bare bones.
Mm-hmm.
This is all your
all
world.
All right. So, right? Okay. So then we'll go. All right. Okay. Well, then go on. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Just, you know, their ability to, you know, ambulate throughout the house safely, where they have devices that they may use to ambulate safely, and kind of what that general broad process looks like.
Ambulate is a big word.
Oh,
so we say to walk. I mean, we just want to make sure. So to walk around the house safely.
Right. Or if they're in a wheelchair, you know, to be able to move around the house safely. How they get to their car, are they able to get outside safely? And, you know, our office is directly across from the fire marshal's office. So
yes.
We also naturally consider things like means of egress, if there were a fire.
Another lovely word. This is like fun. Discuss what means of egress means, which I know.
Having
but
a proper and safe way to exit the home in the event of an emergency.
Yeah.
And
this
preferably
is
at least two, right? So that if one is
lost,
then you could get out still.
Yeah, all these sort of impressive, I had to learn that in occupational safety at work, you know, are what's the means of egress? I'm like, what? They're like, how do you get out? I'm like, oh, means of exit. Okay. And then you just say it, and then you get sort of used to it, and then so you'll help folks in the field, but then the magic happens when you do the beautiful referral over to the Orange County Department on Aging. Is that where, and it goes directly to Marie, or what happens?
Not
then
always. It depends on how much is involved in that family's and that person's situation. Sometimes we need to get our social work team involved. Sometimes we need to get transportation support. I know y'all have talked about some of those various services at some point.
Which you can now go on our website to listen to the previous shows.
Absolutely.
On transportation and supportive services, but go on.
Yeah, but when it is, you know, when there is, you know, a high falls risk, when there are just some mobility challenges, Landon or Andy will write up a beautiful summary for me of all the things that they discovered during their visit and what the biggest points of challenge have been. And since they've already established the relationship with that family, with that community member, when I call them, they're like, oh, yeah, we had a great visit. Aww. Thank you so much for calling. And so that just starts out our rapport on a good foot.
Yeah, so you do the, Landon, you have the harder because you're first establishing the relationship, getting trust. And then by the time Marie comes around, oh, sure, we'd
yeah,
love Andy to have
or
you.
Landon said, come out, sure, let's keep going. It makes things so, so nice. And so I go out and I just do, you know, like a full assessment of, you know, what's going on in the situation with an eye to the things that have already been, you know, mentioned about the person's needs. So just checking in on, you know, whatever, you know, those highest needs things are, whether that is, you know, safe ability to get in and out of their bathtub, whether that's safe ability to get up and down like the front steps of their home, whether that is... I'm trying to think of the other like big things y'all normally point my way. Bathrooms and egress are normally the hot points.
You check the bedrooms?
Absolutely. Yeah, while I'm in the home, I do a thorough check of every of their most used spaces.
The kitchen.
Yeah, well, just because so often, you know, it's never just a fall. There's always something else going on in that situation. And so if we can dive down into, is it because their knees acting up because of arthritis? Is it because of back pain that they've been experiencing for 20 years now? Is it because they've become more dizzy or fatigued related to a condition I can't think of at the moment? But, you know, absolutely. And so diving into, you know, what's, you know, what is the, at least a perceived root cause of this, and what, you know, other modifications do we need to make within the home to, whether that's saving them energy as they go throughout the day, making sure they're not feeling as dizzy, you know, during various different activities, making sure they don't, you know, get overly tired, making sure that they have the hand supports they need throughout the house, and just kind of even observing them walk from room to room and seeing, are you holding on to a doorknob while you're moving through the space? Is that doorknob loose now?
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that, one, we need to tighten the doorknob, and two, that means you need a hand support in this area?
And do you have, again, leading questions, do you have a checklist that you go through? Clearly, you've been doing it for a long time, so you have the mental checklist. Spoiler alert, it's going to go into how can people create their own checklist or where they can find some. And so you clearly have your own, but do you work with your own mental checklist, or do you have a physical checklist that you start going through?
I have a version of a paper checklist, but it's definitely morphed and changed over the years. It's more like a list of, like, let me double check these things. And then it's like I use it as more of a conversation guide for myself. There are standardized checklists out there, both for professionals and for community members.
Mm-hmm.
So I know there's a gray, there's...
I know, I didn't prepare you. I know that AARP has, I recently was sharing it with a family about, here are, if you're going to be aging in your own home, here's that home safety checklist. And I think that's, you know, AARP has that, and then a number
the
of others.
CDC Steady program has a fantastic
option. Hold on. Alicia, let's write that down. Steady.
CDC and Steady is STEADI.
I'm
sure
wouldn't
it
have
stands
done
for something.
Initiative at the end.
Yeah,
we're just... Yeah, we're the people, and we didn't know about the STEADI program. I do a lot with AARP,
I
so I know about them.
It is definitely a hallmark of the falls prevention world. I know OTs, PTs, hopefully physicians and providers are involved in that. But it's just got some great, fantastic resources about falls and fall safety and falls prevention overall.
Okay.
It's kind of broken up, too, where it could, like, part of it is more focused at, like, the clinician, and part of it is more focused at the individual.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go back to what happens in the home, but while we're talking about resources, are there resources on the Orange County Department on Aging's website, or are there other places if people want to go be an online researcher and find some things for themselves or their loved ones? Would we send them to the CDC or AARP, or would we send them to our website?
The STEADI resource
STEADI
has some great resources. One of my favorite online options is AARP's Home Fit Guide.
Oh, Home Fit. I was saying home safety. It's Home Fit. Okay.
Yeah. And so it's not necessarily a checklist, but it's a room-by-room like photo guide about, here are different considerations for things that you can do to make sure your home is, you know, supporting you as you're aging, not, you know, not hindering you, not making things harder just because of the way the environment's set up.
And do you... Well, I'll go into my quick little tangent. So my birthday is coming up. But don't... Yeah, thank you so much. I'll be gone. For my next show, I will say I'm 53, not 52. And I said it quickly to my husband, and I will actually be reiterating this tonight. What I want for my birthday is better lighting. I need better lighting in where I get dressed, and then in the kitchen. There's a few areas. My eyesight is getting more problematic, and so I am banging into things. We have a joke, like, when did that wall get put there? Or when am I now with these glasses? I have these progressives, these trifold. I have terrible peripheral vision, and you know, if I were to walk a small dog, I'm sure I'd trip over it. So I'm banging into things more. And also, last week I left with, you know, blue pants and black shoes, and that's not okay. So I want better. Carl is listening to us in the other room and laughing. So I need better lighting, and I remember when we were getting my mom assessed for fall risk, that was one of the things that trip from the bed to the bathroom in the middle of the night,
critical.
You know, how to sort of get around and not fall and bang into things. So my birthday present was a segue to talk about lighting and other things that people don't, you were wondering where we were going with that, Landon, what people don't realize contribute to fall risk. So I just threw out lighting and my aging eyes.
Yeah, lighting, lighting is actually like one of my like bullet points here that I wanted to make sure.
Oh, she's
dark areas, add lighting, vision changes. That's literally what my note says.
I know I did the lighting for my husband, who is 89, 90, 100. It's the same.
every week her husband's like significantly older by number of years.
But I did, you know, and then you saw the ones as seen on TV and those. But there's some, you plug them in and as soon as...
Oh, the sensor lights. Yes, we have sensor lights.
Nice.
Oh yeah, we have sensor lights in our bathroom, and so that's. But then it's a big thing. Again, I'll overshare. I go to bed a lot later than my husband, and then I sneak in, and the sensor light goes on. I'm like, shh, and I quickly like turn it off, so that way. But the sensor light is a wonderful thing, so that way. But then, and then fun things that people don't. The toilet lights. You know, you can add lights. And you get the multicolor ones, and so it can be like green and then blue.
I don't know about that. So,
oh, I did that one year. I got a cheap one. It didn't last very long, but my kids liked it. It was like holiday lights. Well, because, you know, you can see things. Lighting's important. Okay, sorry.
Okay,
you're good. Fun.
Me and Alicia and I are going off.
I did like the night lights.
The night lights are great.
I don't know about them, you know.
Can I just say, that was one of the things, like, when we first started getting into this world and you know, trying to kind of mimic what Marie's expertise is in, that was one of the things that I just did not imagine, because we don't ever interact with people when it's dark, you know.
And
I remember.
Well, and it's not even just when it's dark outside. It's and I'm not a numbers person, so don't quote me on any of these stats.
Oh, funny, we're getting into stats soon, but go on. I won't test you. It'll be okay.
As you know, as we get older, as any of us get older, our eyes need more light to perceive in the same way we did when we were younger.
Oh, yes, they do. Thank you. That is, I am living
so
proof of it.
It's just a natural part of the aging process, is that our eyes just, you know, I think it's something about the elasticity in the eyes, and they just need more light. Mm-hmm. So more light fixtures, brighter bulbs, dimmer switches,
right. Well, and... Oh, I was just going to... Okay, it doesn't matter. I'll get back to it. And now I'm just on a whole light fix. But it... Oh, I know what it was. Speaking of stats, I was at a... You know, I geek out on some really good research presentations. And I was hearing about research that our colleagues over at UNC and the Shep Center and their Center for Excellence in Assisted Living. I think they have a new group. And they had a study where they worked in an assisted living community. I hope I don't say it wrong, and so nobody quote me on this. And rather than doing major lighting changes, they just changed the lighting around the door frames. So it was about increasing the contrast. So you don't want to bother folks when they're sleeping, and just by increasing the contrast lighting, they had a significant reduction in falls.
Absolutely.
So there's a creative way of dealing with lighting without just, well, I guess I'm sleeping with the lights on. No, it's certain doorways or frames or around things or the cute little $3 night lights. I mean,
well, and I think about, not necessarily with falls in the same way, but task lighting, the lighting that focuses on the task at hand I think of that most often as I've got lights underneath my kitchen cabinets.
Yes.
Because the main kitchen light's behind, like, on the in the middle of the ceiling, right behind me, and then my shadow's on the counter. And what good does that do anybody?
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, thinking about the direction of the lights within your space, too. One, so it, you know, shines the light on the most, you know, challenging areas. But, two, it doesn't provide, like, unnecessary glare. Because
yes.
glare is a whole other set of challenge within that situation. Because if you can't quite focus on what's in front of you, that's not going to help anything either.
All right. So we've talked about lighting. We talked about the other issue that I know I experience in my house, and I get nervous when I have folks of any age come over, is the rugs.
Mm-hmm.
Those lovely decorative rugs that I'm noticing are starting to curl up on the corners.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep trying to get that, like, rug tape. You know, I'm crazy about Amazon, and clearly they don't support our show, but, like, the Velcro and the tape and all these things to keep.
I think that's a sign.
I've put.
Remove the rug.
But it's such a pretty rug. But yes, and so rugs, or what other are trip hazards that when you see, your spidey sense goes off, like, uh-oh.
Oh, and I will say, I, as an OT, I'm not anti-rug. I'm anti-unsafe rugs.
Okay, good to clarify.
So, yeah, don't just go take up all the rugs everywhere just because it's a rug on the floor.
But if it's curling up or moving or something, that's a sign.
Exactly. So when I see rugs that are just rumpled up,
mm-hmm.
that's
yes.
a sign that we need to switch something up. And either there was never any backing on it, or even if there used to be a good non-slip
It's got
backing,
the curl up.
It can wear out, or the edges are curling. And so, yeah, it just depends on the style of rug. I like to think the rug tape
mm-hmm.
works pretty well for folks, but maybe it doesn't always. Maybe it depends on the brand. Maybe it needs 15 layers. It might be time to switch the rug out, or it might be time to find that particular beautiful rug a slightly different home within your home.
Got it.
And put the one that's in the high traffic area as something a little bit more safe.
Okay. And then I'm thinking about other big issues, because I know this is so important. And the one that I've also heard is let's all go to the bathroom together. And people misunderstanding their towel rack and thinking
uh-huh.
it's a handrail.
Right.
Like, oh, that's
towel
and I
racks,
good
the
friend.
Washcloth rack in the bathtub, toilet paper holders,
right.
I also see.
Yep. The shower curtain is how a good friend of my their mother just was holding on for steadiness with the towel curtain, like the shower curtain,
ride.
And just
mm-hmm.
went down.
And it happens. It happens. Even those suction cup grab bars, I cannot emphasize enough, they can't be trusted. Not long term.
Okay, so you find all of these things,
mm-hmm.
and then what? I say thank you, Marie, for pointing out everything that's problematic in my environment.
Don't leave you with only challenges.
I was gonna say, let's move from problem. Oh, wait, no, we're still staying with problems. Sorry, Alicia.
What about the tubs that have, you know, I noticed that they make the tubs a little lower,
mm-hmm.
but most seniors still have to step over that.
Yeah, for sure, and it is probably one of my favorite devices in existence. There is something lovely, you probably already know what it is, Heather, a tub transfer bench. So if you have one of those traditional tub shower combos with a ledge to step over, and stepping on one foot just doesn't feel as good as it used to, a tub bench allows you to, so it's got two legs inside your tub and two legs outside, so you got to have enough space for that.
Yeah.
But then you sit down on the bench on those on the side where the two legs are outside, and then you can just slide on in the tub without ever having to balance on one foot.
You just sit down and just
slide
scooch.
On in.
It's hard to describe,
beautiful.
But if you saw it, you'd go, oh, yeah, that's what that is.
Yeah. If anybody wants a video or a picture or to practice with one, let me know. I'm glad to do that.
Ah, fun.
But, you know, and even if, you know, if that feels like it's not quite the right step, adding grab bars to the shower, especially one, like, right there at that threshold that you can hold on as you step over, that can be a good support. If you are in a home where maybe you can't add grab bars because maybe you're renting for some reason and don't mm-hmm. have the funds to do it and then undo it, there's also what's called a tub clamp bar that it can clamp to the side of the bathtub itself.
Oh.
And then that's a handhold for you as you step over. So there's definitely some options. If you have funding, then, you know, transitioning to a walk-in shower might be an option.
Mm-hmm.
But it just depends on the space you have and what funding is available to you. But there are options to make it safer, for sure.
So for our community members for whom that is going to be a problem financially in terms of putting, you know, handrails up or other things, where do you point them? How does that how does that happen that they get connected with resources and not like, thank you for pointing out things I can't afford?
Yeah, no. So for every challenge I present, I provide an option.
Great.
If not one option, two options, three options. So sometimes I feel a little bad. So after every consult I do, I send a follow-up letter or follow-up email with everything I noticed, everything we talked about, and all of my recommendations, product suggestions, that kind of thing. It ends up being a little long sometimes, so
it's okay.
Apologies to anybody.
Being long-winded and wordy is a wonderful, wonderful strength. Some of us embrace that.
Yeah, I try and make it clear, but sometimes I look at it and I'm like, well, I mean, everything's in there, but it's a doozy.
But you have options, and that folks at all economic levels, whether it's free or low cost or other community programs.
Yeah. You know, and while I'm there, we kind of, you know, we talk through maybe not the numbers per se, but how much they feel, you know, like, oh, that feels like that's something we could take care of, or that's just not within budget right now. If something's not within budget, either I find a resource or we keep brainstorming.
Well, speaking of budget and cost, that does lead to the question, how much does that doggy in the window cost? So you remember that? Okay. How much does all of this cost? So you come to my house, you must charge me. This is totally a lead up question. This is a softball. How much do you charge me, Marie, to come to my house and tell me all of these things?
I mean, you're already paying your county taxes, so that's that.
A lot of people don't know.
This is our government at work. Thank you, Landon. Thank you, Marie.
Forget. It's like, it's just so common in our world that I myself forget to mention that to people a lot of times.
Even,
but it is a really important
even
quote.
Your services, we would never think that. We would think that that's part of the part that goes to the insurance that comes back in the mail saying we owe $250.
Because this program, this
completely free.
Mobilize integrated health care.
When you were mentioning that original phone call earlier, that is like the third component that we try to kind of squeeze in there in that brief period of time we have to convince somebody that, you know,
that
it would be beneficial.
This is the cost to you because we're thinking, like my husband went to the hospital because he's in it. And when he got the bill from, they were charging for the ambulance charge, but which was, you know, a mess. It was just misunderstood because the hospital determined to take him to another hospital.
And oh, so then you got a transfer cost. All
right,
sorry.
So, but there shouldn't be a transfer cost because I told him I could drive him myself.
So, yeah, so there's it's important to highlight that these are free and low cost for
right.
folks who live in Orange County.
Yes.
So what happens, are there programs similar to this in our friends in Durham County and Chatham County? So if you fall and you live right over the border, what happens to you?
Yeah, well, on our side, we're pretty close with our counterparts in Durham.
Okay, great.
They'll have to forgive me if I'm wrong about this, but I believe they changed the name of their program to Mobile Integrated Healthcare.
Mobile Integrated, from Community Paramedic.
They
are Mobile Integrated Healthcare. MIC? Mike? I don't even know what you would call that, but okay.
There's no C on the
My HC. Okay.
Helen Tripp is their manager, and they, within, I believe, the last 2 years, they, to my understanding, implemented a falls prevention program as well, or at least were in the process of it.
So. Great. So Durham has one, and then what about in Chatham or other folks?
Alamance,
I mean, Alamance.
I'm not aware of anything that exists in Alamance or Chatham, but
yeah, if you can work on that.
that, you know, is interested in that area, I'd encourage you to reach out to them because we're not always up to date on everything.
Yeah, no, I think it's really important that people learn about these options. One more question about cost, because this was a big issue in my family. My mother was falling quite a bit towards the end of her life, and my parents used to be in Boston, and then they came here, and when she would fall in Boston, and that's a different sort of a fire department versus it's a different response group. Here we have EMS, and that's a whole other discussion. But there was the concern that if they called too many times that they would be charged.
Exactly.
And so when my mom would fall here, my dad was like, we'll call my husband, we'll call someone else because we're going to get charged. And so the 5 times that I used every time we said, are you sure this is okay? And they said, there is no charge. So just tell us about that, right? So if people call 911, we don't want people misusing 911, but they don't get charged.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that I don't have to kind of wedge this in conversation at some point now because
no idea what you're going to share, but I like to just throw questions out.
That's something that I wanted to make sure we did share today. There is no charge for that situation. Typically, if someone is not transported from the scene, there, generally speaking, is not a charge for services. There are situations where there could be, depending on if interventions were involved on that scene. But simply assisting someone up if they had a fall is absolutely not one of those circumstances. So there would be no charge for that.
Great.
We often will refer to that as a lift assist call.
Yes.
And, you know, as you mentioned, there can be a line between what that is and what another situation may be. But we, unfortunately, I personally, when I lived in Carborough, my next-door neighbor had a fall.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very long period of time before she was able and willing to call for help from the ground.
Because, they're kind of fearful of what it would do to them financially.
Going back to the independence earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Their independence and financially.
Right.
And
you said that.
How do you get that across, though, with the, what you all are doing?
You're here to help us. So, you know, my mother loved it in Boston because, the firemen came and they got me up off the floor. They're so strong. I loved them. So, yeah. Sorry. Go on, Landon. You're going to talk about.
That's sometimes the reaction. There is no fee associated with it, and we want to make sure people are aware of that, that if you are ever in a situation where you cannot safely, even if there was no injury associated with it, a common call type is someone who was in the process of maybe transferring from one chair to the toilet or transferring from the bed to a wheelchair, and they simply lose their footing and drift to the ground without any sort of injury
or
are unable to safely get
up. How do you differentiate calling you versus... Because I've called and everybody comes. I counted like 23 people.
For that type of call.
Oh, maybe that's... when I would call 911, I would say, she's not hurt, she's on the floor. They knew.
Description. I guess I called and said he fell and I couldn't get him up. But so many people came, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I think in all of emergency services from telecommunications to, you know, EMS and beyond, there's always going to be that attempt to play it the most cautious route. And if there was any sort of a reason to believe that there might be an injury or that additional resources are needed, our amazing telecommunicators are typically going to err on that side of caution.
And send more.
So that could be it. Obviously, I don't know the specific case. But there would be no fee associated with that. And, again, if that ultimately also, there's no incentive for our folks to encourage someone to go to the emergency department if they don't deem it medically necessary.
Talk to them and make them comfortable with knowing that the independence is not going to be compromised and you're not going to get charged for this.
Right.
Because those are very, people are afraid of
that. Yeah, and that's the last thing that any of us want is someone to have hesitancy in calling in that situation. And that's where the seed is planted and that our folks will start doing like the very bare bones degree of what Marie ultimately is accomplishing of saying, okay, you fell here. What can we do in this like isolated space to try to keep you safe? Or can we bring some sort of device to make sure you have the ability to call 911 from this isolated space? So that's where it begins.
All right. We have a little bit left in the show. I want to talk more about falls, but Landon, before we move away from 911, want to see if there's anything else about 911 that you wanted to do a shout out about before we go back into fall.
I'll do a real, real quick punch because a lot of people just aren't aware of this, but one of the complications with that is people being able to access something to call 911. And, you know, a fall is going to be unpredictable a lot of times, and you might not have access. So, again, with the financial barrier that is common, a lot of people are not able to afford, like, a medical assistance device. They're typically fee-associated.
Medical assistance device like a wheelchair, like a walker, those kinds of
things.
Oh, the personal emergency, the PERS, personal
like
emergency.
The
help, I've fallen and I can't get up, which is a great point. I have fallen and I can't get up. I don't know why. Okay, so that's what the medical alert. All right.
Yeah, which is a great peace of mind for folks because it's always on your person.
Yes.
But some of the other alternatives that we try to discuss with people is that any cell phone, it doesn't matter. You know, I have a cell phone in my closet right now that I stopped using 2 years ago. It no longer has a SIM card in it. if I power that phone on, it can call 911 and it will call 911.
I had not thought about that.
It's legal.
Oh my gosh, this is okay.
They're required to still be able, so whatever access points they have in terms of, you know, if it has.
So you should even keep your old ones charged up a little bit, just in case.
It's a possible solution. Like you could keep it with you.
Or one in the bathroom, one in the bedroom. Like if you keep your main.
Now some of the old cell phones, those bands are no longer accessible in the cellular network world. So you do want it to be a little more recent. But it's something to consider and, you know, talk to folks about.
Okay, good to know.
Any landline cell phone or any landline home phone is the same thing. If it has a physical connection to the line, it doesn't matter if you're paying your cell phone bill or your home phone bill or not, it will still contact 911.
All right, good to know. Thank you.
Those are big ones. Make sure we get that out there.
These are big ones. Thank you.
Well,
so now.
Another thing about cell phones, even if, like, say you're out and about and there's an emergency and maybe you don't have your phone, but the person who's having the emergency does, even if you don't know the code to get into their phone, you can still call 911 from it.
Yeah, good call.
Oh, even if you don't have the facial recognition, if you just.
Every phone, like, you could call 911.
Hold on, we're all pulling our phones out right now.
Yeah,
and okay,
the same space is where you would pull up someone's emergency.
Oh, where it says emergency down.
Okay. All right. Well, so we have a few minutes left, and I want to make sure we give full love for Falls Prevention Awareness Week. And Marie, I turn it over to you. We always have a little bit of a – we like to have our fun facts and sexy statistics part of our show. So talk to us about the proclamation or why there's Fall Prevention Week. If you want to throw a few statistics in, I won't stop you.
Yeah, well, I mean, the easiest thing, so the governor put out a proclamation earlier this week just saying, yes, North Carolina is once again recognizing Falls Prevention Awareness Week. And he really, or his staff, really outlined in this proclamation, you know, why is this important for our state? And Landon's got some stats specifically about our county as well. But I'll go ahead and read this for us. So, whereas approximately 17.1% of North Carolinians are 65 years of age or older, it is estimated that a quarter of people age 65 and older fall each year. And older adults who fall once are 2 to 3 times more likely to fall again. Estimates by the North Carolina Injury and Violence Prevention Branch of the Division of Public Health, unintentional falls are the leading cause of fatal and non-fatal injuries among people in our state age 65 and older, causing over 1,500 deaths, over 20,000 hospitalizations, and over 100,000 emergency department visits last year.
Whoa.
That's a lot of folks.
It's a lot. Sorry,
go
on. Sorry. Yes, it's intense.
Wow. Knowing that unintentional falls can lead to depression, loss of mobility, loss of functional independence, and are the most common cause of traumatic brain injuries among North Carolinians age 65 plus, and that accounts for 67.3% of total traumatic brain injuries among those folks last year. Whereas the average hospitalization charge of an unintentional fall for a North Carolina resident age 65 plus was over $67,000.
I saw that
year.
When I saw the proclamation. So one person, they fall, it can be a
$67,000.
Okay, go on. Sorry,
I mean,
we have a few minutes left.
That?
It's crazy.
Whereas evidence-based programs reduce falls through cost-effective strategies such as exercise programs to improve balance and strength, medication management, vision improvement, reduction in home hazards,
we talked about that,
and falls prevention education. And whereas the North Carolina Falls Prevention Coalition, of which I am a member, is working to increase awareness of this issue, promoting multidisciplinary strategies to prevent falls and encourage people to take steps, I hope pun intended, to protect those who are at increased risk of falling.
I mean, that's amazing. And so I'll talk quickly because I know we only have 2 minutes left, but we did talk so much about the hazards around the house. We talked about if you do fall, 911 will come and then they'll assess to see whether maybe you can be a part of this program. I know you just said it, but take just another moment or two to talk about other things our listeners can do to help to prevent falls. Or as there was big talk years ago, if you can't prevent a fall, to prevent injury from falls. So what would you push and say, hey, stay up and do what?
Yeah, so the North Carolina Council on Aging outlined 6 six key things.
I'll
go through them super quick.
No, no, you're good. You have a minute and 20 seconds. We're great.
So number one, find a good balance and exercise program.
Alicia, go on. Sorry. All right, good. We got Alicia. Go on.
Yeah, keep your body moving. Keep it upright. Number two, talk to your healthcare provider. Stay in touch with your physician, with your, you know, eye optometrist, your eye doctor, you know, get that risk assessment for your falls risk. Number three, regularly review your medications with your doctor or your pharmacist.
Mm-hmm.
Double check that you don't have some kind of wild thing going on between this medication from this physician and that medication from that physician, plus your over-the-counter stuff.
Yep.
Make sure it's all working together for you.
Listen to our past talk with Dr. Delon Canterbury on older adults and medication. Okay.
Sure. Number four, get your vision and hearing checked annually.
There's my vision.
And update your eyeglasses.
Yeah, okay, I'm doing it.
So
all right.
If they recommend it, please go for it.
I need to do that. Go on.
Number five, keep your home safe.
Yep,
we
did that.
Which is a lot of what we've talked about here today. And number six, talk to your family members. So stay in touch.
Why are we talking to them?
Yeah, so stay in touch with them, you know,
I love
knowing
my family.
Each other's needs, you know, seeing how they can support you to be successful and be safe in your home. So
oh, my.
Six things from the NCOA.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. You are always welcome back. I cannot thank enough Marie Dagger and Landon Weaver from the Orange County Department on Aging and the Orange County Emergency Medical Services. Alicia has something to say before we do our kiss goodbye.
Landon to give us one statistic.
Oh, you have a statistic. Say your statistic.
You know, I know there's a big one out there.
Yeah, well, there are. I mean, so
you're good. Go on. Yeah.
In the last 5 years, we've had 8,502 false calls.
I was going to ask that. 8,502 calls. Okay.
2018 through 2019.
I was a number of them. Thank you.
That were dispatched as falls. And this is not all of them. Oftentimes, there are other ways calls will be dispatched that still will be the result of a fall. But we have seen this consistently. It's always around 13% of our call volume in Orange County.
13%. Mm-hmm.
And we say this just because there are avenues, like Marie just outlined, of simple ways to try to prevent the likelihood of someone being a victim of that statistic, right? And unfortunately, of all of those false calls, one out of 50 results in them being transported emergency traffic to a hospital, which typically means there was some sort of critical injury associated with that fall. So.
Yeah.
Not as a scare tactic, but as a motivating tactic.
It's serious business, and it causes, you know, a lot of intensity. Again, thank you. See, there's a lot to talk about. We were worried. You were worried. I was not worried. I knew we'd have plenty to talk about with falls. Listeners, please stay healthy, stay upright, and have a wonderful first day of fall. And again, many, many thanks, Marie and Landon and Alicia, always with you. And listeners, we will talk with you and listen, I guess, soon enough. Thank you so much.